You're the one that I can do that. You're the one that I can do that. You're the one that I can do that.
Jayam Vishnupad Paramahans Pariva Chakacharya. Astotara Satyashri, Sriman is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON founder Acharya, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Raj Granta, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Sri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. Sri Sri Gornatai Ki Jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Nithai Gaur Premanande. Glories to the assembled devotees, glories to the assembled devotees, glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jaya Jaya no. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 6, chapter number 5. Chapters entitled Narada Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha, text number 18. Aishwaram Satram Utsritstyaha. Aishwaram Shastram Utsritstyaha. Bandha Moksha Nudarshanam. Vivikta para agyaya kimma sadkarma bhavet aishwaram shastram usrisya bandha moksha nudarshanam vivikta param agyaya Kimmasat kama birbhavet Aishwaram shastram utsrijya Bandha moksha nudarshanam Vivikta param agyaya Kimmasat karma birbhavet Yeah. Aishwaram, bringing understanding of God or Krishna consciousness. Shastram, the Vedic literature. Usrijya, giving up. Bandha, of bondage. Moksha, and of liberation. Anudarshanam, informing about the ways. Vivikta padam, distinguishing spirit from matter. Agyaya, not knowing. Kim asat karma bi bhavet, what can be the use of temporary fruitive activities? Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Narada Muni had spoken of a swan. That swan is explained in this verse. The Vedic literature shastras vividly describe how to understand the Supreme Lord, the source of all material and spiritual energy. Indeed, they elaborately explain these two energies. The swan, Hamsa, is one who discriminates between matter and spirit, who accepts the essence of everything, and who explains the means of bondage and the means of liberation. The words of scriptures consist of variegated vibrations. If a foolish rascal leaves aside the study of these shastras to engage in temporary activities, what will be the result? What will be the result? Purport. The Krishna conscious movement is very eager to present Vedic literature in modern languages, especially Western languages such as English, French, and German. The leaders of the Western world, the Americans and the Europeans, have become the idols of modern civilization because the Western people are very sophisticated in temporary activities for the advancement of material civilization. A sane man, however, can see that all such grand activities, although perhaps very important for temporary life, have nothing to do with eternal life. The entire world is imitating the materialistic civilization of the West, and therefore, the Krishna conscious movement is very much interested in giving the Western people knowledge by translating the original Vedic Sanskrit literatures into Western language. The word vivikta padam refers to the path of logical discourses concerning the aim of life. If one does not discuss that which is important in life, one is put into darkness and must struggle for existence. What then is the benefit of his advancement in knowledge? The people of the West are seeing their students becoming hippies despite gorgeous arrangements for university education. The Krishna conscious movement, however, is trying to convert misguided, drug addicted students to the service of Krishna and engage them in the best welfare activities for human society. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gena Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stabditam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishavanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Tarubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimakti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sunyavari Pastyatyare Satarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sya Dvaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. This section is somewhat allegorical, and that is that Narada Muni wants to give a very powerful message to the Hayashvas. Daksha is a progenitor, and his service is to create children who will create more children in order to bring about the creation. In other words, at the end of a previous creation, there is an interim period. And then in order to bring back the creation, there are persons who are empowered to produce progeny. And Daksha is one of them. So he produces these sons called the Haryashvas. And now he's sending them to the holy places to become purified, so they can take up household life and produce many children, in other words, following in the footsteps of their father. But they meet Narada Muni, and Narada Muni sees that these persons are actually quite advanced spiritually. So why would we try to encourage them to take up household life, which means simply a detour in one's progress in devotional service? This is basically what is being said here. In the earlier verses, we hear that how they are almost on the platform of liberation already, having come to the holy places, being empowered to do this work, and at the same time, they're coming from very good progeny. So Narada, in order to give them a message, he doesn't preach to them directly. He doesn't say, why are you doing this, or what is the purpose, or he basically tells them about an analogy where there's a king, a kingdom, a hall, a prostitute, what else? A few more analogies. We're coming to the swan now, and then there's another one, sharp razor, a river that goes in both directions. I think we've heard about 6 or 7 of the analogies, and now we're coming to the last two. And here, the swan. A swan is a very interesting animal. Have you ever observed a swan? Very graceful. They make all the other birds look like, you know, fools in terms of their movements. Very graceful, very beautiful to look at. There are white swans and there are also black swans too. Both are very, very attractive. Where I am in Croatia, we have one lake and there's some swans in the lake, so I get to see them every once in a while when we drive past. And the quality, this is mentioned here, the quality of a swan, he can discriminate between what is good and what is not, what is important and what is not, what is essential and what is just a waste of time. And here it is explained he knows the essence of everything. So there's a kind of a person who is called a swan-like man, a person who has the qualities of a swan, or that's those qualities that were able to distinguish what has value in life and what we can leave aside. Now, here it's described as the difference between spirit and matter. So a swan takes the essence of something. Now, spirit and matter are so closely combined together, one cannot discriminate between the two. In fact, the whole material world is simply a combination of those two energies, that's all. Matter, bhumir apanalo bayu, kamana bhuriye vacha, ahankar pritiyame bina prakriti astada. And then spirit. Apareyam jiva, what is that verse? Apareyam jiva bam the mahabaho yeyedam jayate jagat. This comprises the whole of the creation. The creation is simply matter, but what gives matter life is spirit. And what is that spirit? That is the living entity in within matter. It makes matter move, or this tiny spiritual particles. The Lord accompanies the tiny spiritual particles as the super soul. But basically, when we describe the material world, it's made up of these two essential elements and nothing else. So one who can distinguish what is eternal, what is temporary, what is important, what is, what we say, necessary but not important. Material life may become unnecessary, or we might say a necessary burden. Prabhupada says to have a material body means to get a bad bargain. You go shopping, you look for the best item, somehow or other you got cheated. The merchant really knew how to sell the product without giving you the best. You got something and you can't trade it in. You can't return it. There's no refund. So that is called having a bad material body. We don't see it like that. Some of us, you know, if you really have a bad material body, you think, this is a nice philosophy. But if you like your material body, you think, what kind of philosophy is this? You know, depends. One of my sincere and very elevated God brothers, Jayadvaita Maharaj, was preaching at one Rath Yatra after. He was doing the questions and answer booth. And there was two very huge ladies there. I mean, they were huge. And he was preaching that you're not this body. You are the driver, you are the energy within the body. And he's going on and going on and speaking like this. Finally, one of the ladies pokes her friend, who's just the same size as her, and says, hey, you hear that? We're not this body. It was like good news, you know. But if it's a beauty queen or somebody who's very attractive, you think, well, what do you mean I'm not this body? This is where I get all my profit from, right? But it's a fact. We're not. This is the essence. This is the, not essence, this is the basis of spiritual philosophy. So to take up material activities means to minimize those material activities and maximize spiritual activities. And this is what Narada Muni is saying to these Hayashvas here, that you have knowledge. What is knowledge? Knowledge is the key to life. For people who don't have knowledge are people who suffer. Suffering is simply due to ignorance. Prabhupada would always use the same example. A little child is ignorant, sticks his hand in the fire, burns his hand. Doesn't know the difference between the fire and other things. So, but a grown-up person, knowing, will not do that. But because the child is ignorant. Therefore, people in this world are not educated in the goal of life, and therefore, they accept something other than the goal of life. And therefore, they suffer. They think to satisfy the senses or to have a lot of material things will bring happiness. But there is no, what we say, record of this thing bringing happiness. We find, you know, people may have so much and so surrounded by so many things, but happiness doesn't come by external things. Happiness is a feature of the heart. It's a feature of the spirit soul connecting with the Supreme Spirit Soul. Therefore, Narada Muni he wants to instruct them, but in such a way as they use their intelligence to understand what he's saying. He can see that they have intelligence. When you tell a little child to do something, you tell him, right? Do this. Or don't do this. You make it clear. You give it direct. When you speak to a grown-up person, you try to stimulate their intelligence to understand what you're saying so they can figure it out for themselves. Because if you tell grown-ups what to do, they don't like it. Because they're grown-ups. And they have an understanding of what is right and what is wrong. But by stimulating the intelligence, by giving an understanding and examples, by basically let them see their own situation and helping them to understand themselves outside of their own situation, they can make a choice. And that's what Narada Muni is doing. He sees that they're almost on the platform of living. Why would you waste your time going in another direction where you almost achieved the goal of life? Your father has sent you here to a holy place to become purified. So you've done that. But now, why take up household life? Which simply is a diversion from focusing 100% on Krishna like that. We're not condemning household life. We're condemning that in this situation, there is a discrimination that is being used. Of course, household life is one of the ashrams. There are four ashrams: brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and household life. But household life tends to allow us so many other activities. And unless we're very, very careful not to get absorbed in those activities, we forget Krishna and we forget the goal of life. Therefore, that should only be undertaken in the possible, most needed situation. In this case, it's not needed. Of course, the guru discriminates by evaluating the disciple to see what is the tendency. If one is already in household life and comes to Krishna conscious, one should follow that and become perfect in household life. One should follow that. But if one is not, then one should see what I can understand in my own situation based on the spiritual master's guidance and instruction and his evaluation in which way I should move in my spiritual life. That's important. So here, Narada Muni is in the position to give that instruction. He can see they're going in the wrong direction. Even if they take up household life, they'll become devotees. At least to practice spiritual life. But Prabhupada mentions that household life is like if you're walking along the road and you see a big rock on the road, and you're on a journey, and you take the rock and you put it on your back and you can think, now I can go on to my journey. It's just an added burden, that's all. But if it's necessary, that's another thing. But how do we understand if it's necessary? It becomes necessary only to fulfill the emotional needs that allow us to practice spiritual life successfully. That's all. That's it. Because we have emotions, and emotions need to be satisfied in a spiritual way. So the Grihastha ashram allows one to focus in such a way that those emotions don't go outside of religious principles. If they do, then one becomes degraded and cannot make progress in spiritual life. Therefore, for a Grihastha, making progress in spiritual life means to be very, very serious. Very, very serious. One has to be very, very careful to follow the religious principles very carefully within Grihastha life. Otherwise, it becomes, what is it called? Grihamedi. Grihamedi means, this is my house, this is my wife, this is my husband, this is my car, this is my possession. Janasamoham yam aham mameti. What does that mean? I and mine. This is I and this is mine. How do we get that conception? Because we think we're this body. As long as this living entity is under the influence, I am this body, then anything in relationship to this body or the identity that this body have fall into those two categories of I and mine. I am Indian, I am American, I am whatever else you might think you are. It's a whole long list. And this is mine. And the scriptures say, Janasa Moha. What does Moha mean? Illusion. This is the illusion. So what do you do with the illusion? You turn it into a reality. Just like some people say, they criticize us in the Hare Krishna movement. Oh, you guys are escaping from reality. No, we're escaping into reality. We're going into reality. You're an illusion because you think you're this body and you think you could be happy by satisfying the needs of this body. Right? But everybody's trying to satisfy the needs of the body. But who's happy? And the more you try to satisfy it, the more miserable you get. Isn't that something? You got cheated. You came to this world and I teach you, get this, do this, be there, go here, do that, try this. You know, it's a whole long list of how to become happy. But it's a joke. You've been fooled. It's a trick. It's an all a lie, right? The moon, they say the moon, they say the sun doesn't go around the earth. It stays in one place. Another lie. Everything you learn in school is useless. Everything you've learned from your parents, if there's other than being a good kid, is useless. It's all useless because it doesn't really give you the, I'm sorry, it doesn't really put you on the path of ultimate happiness. So, therefore, Shastra, as is mentioned here, is like the bright light within this dark, illusionary, material existence. And Shastra has to be taught by Guru. Narada Muni is explaining Shastra in such an interesting way. He's making it for them to figure it out. He knows they'll figure it out. They do ultimately figure it out, what he's saying, because they're somewhat enlightened. They've been purified. They performed austerities. Austerities are important. Austerities get us off the bodily platform, which allows knowledge to take place within the heart and mind. If one is still very much attached or engaged in sense gratification, one cannot understand this philosophy. It sounds very ethereal or almost impractical. But when we perform austerities, then the mind becomes somewhat free from the tendency to enjoy material life, And one becomes, what we say, receptive to transcendental knowledge. One becomes receptive to transcendental. So what is the austerities? No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. So these are the foundations of all sense gratification in the material world. If one follows these four principles and chants the holy names of the Lord, that is considered the ultimate principle of austerity. But do it, not just for one day, one week, one year, 5 years, 10 years. Do it your whole life. That's the austerity. And as you become more and more free from the tendency for sense gratification, transcendental knowledge takes root within the heart and mind. And transcendental knowledge is a light in the right direction. Transcendental knowledge is not the goal itself. The goal is loving devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is ultimately the goal, because that is the nature of all living beings in this world. But transcendental knowledge gives us the direction and the clarity of understanding how to accept transcendental knowledge and how to apply transcendental knowledge. We hear transcendental knowledge, but application is more important than simply hearing. Of course, hearing is a prerequisite for application. But unless we learn how to apply transcendental knowledge in the day-to-day life, it becomes simply philosophy. And you can't eat your philosophy. You have to realize this knowledge by engaging in devotional service, by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with determination, with attention, free from the desire to, what we say, hear. You'll see every verse. This is really interesting. This is amazing. How Narada Muni, how the Bhagavatam really says. Starting with verse 11, and going through the different analogies, it says, what is the benefit of temporary fruitive activities? Every verse, what will be the benefit of this action? What will be the benefit of this activity? Number 13, what will be the profit? What is the actual gain? What will be the benefit? What's this one? What is the benefit of performing fruitive activities in the river of the material energy? What benefit will one derive? So what are fruitive activities? You have to understand what is fruitive activities before you can understand what devotional service is. Fruitive activities means I do something for my gain. I'm looking to get something from that activity. Right? I go to work, I make money, I use the money for my happiness. That is called fruitive activity. So, fruitive activities bind one to the consciousness of material activities. They perpetuate more and more. And therefore, as long as one is situated in fruitive activities, one can understand detachment. And detachment is the principle of happiness. One has to perform activities, right? You can't get away from activities. You have to do something. But the difference between spiritual activities or detached activities, which are not even spiritual, and fruitive activities, is that the goal is not to enjoy it, but to use the activity as a benefit for one's purification. That is also somewhat self-centered, but it's a good type of self-centeredness. It's a good type of self-centeredness, where you perform an activity knowing that by offering the fruits of the activity in devotion to the Supreme Lord, or detaching oneself from the results of that activity, one makes progress in spiritual life. So fruitive activities just bind one. And you see, people are struggling hard, racing to work every day. Why? I got to get to work. I got to get the job. I got to do my work. I got to please the boss. I got to get some money. I got to get a promotion. I got to get whatever I have to get.
And there's a whole long list. Fruitive activities are more like a stranglehold on one's existence. And one cannot live thinking, without gaining something in my activities, what is the use of life? If we tell people, do something, but you get no benefit from it, they'll think, what are you, crazy? You don't get nothing out of it. Like someone you might say, go to work and give all your money away. Oh, what are you, crazy? It's not practical. Don't even think like that. But, or do something and you don't really do something that is authorized, not something that is unauthorized. There's vicious fruitive activities which are condemned in the Shastras and condemned by society itself. That is sinful activities. That we understand. But acceptable fruitive activities, which fall into the modes of passion and goodness and passion, are those activities which produce some kind of desirable result. Yeah. I go to school, I get an education, I use my education to get a good job. Right? This is life in this material world. But one who has some transcendental knowledge doesn't neglect activities in this world, but they use the activities or the results of the activities as an offering to Krishna. So that's devotional service. But actually that is getting to the platform of devotional service. Devotional service actually means to do the activities simply under the guidance of the spiritual master, simply for the pleasure of the Lord. That's all. That's devotional service. No personal gain, either gross or subtle. Gross means I do something and I'm looking for some position. Subtle, I get some glorification, I get some prestige, I get some stimulation by what I do. But the devotee is thinking how to please Krishna. That's all. That is the basis of Krishna consciousness. And that's the nature of the soul. The soul can only be happy when it tries to perform activities for the pleasure of the Lord. So Narada Muni is somehow or other encouraging them to come to that stage. But first they have to renounce fruitive activities. So gradually he's taking them to that stage. And then once they renounce fruitive activities, naturally they'll take up devotional activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the swan. The swan is both one who discriminates and also the saintly person. The swan is very discriminating. A saintly person has the qualities of a swan-like person. He's swan-like in person like that. So Prabhupada, in this whole purport, what is he talking about? We're eager to give knowledge to the Western society. We have produced these Vedic scriptures. People are suffering. Knowledge is the light in the right direction. So therefore, one must carefully understand Shastra in a relationship to spiritual activities and not simply perform an activity and not know why. I was reading the other night, the most foolish thing you can do is do something and not know why you do it. Well, my parents told me I should do it. Well, that's nice, but why? For a little child, they can't understand why they're supposed to do something. But when we get beyond that stage, then we understand, what is the purpose of what I'm doing? What is the ultimate purpose? What is the real purpose? There may be many purposes, but what is the real purpose for everything I do? And therefore, understanding that's where Shastra comes in. It explains what is the result, or what is the value of anything you do in devotional service. What are the values you get in material activities, both. So therefore, one must understand these things, hearing from the swan-like persons who understand the process of bhakti. The process of bhakti is the process of life. So ultimately, what is the point? The point is, unless we, the living entity, comes to the platform of giving up the desire to enjoy material life, spiritual life can never take hold in a very serious way. We have to understand through cultivation of knowledge and hearing from Shastra and Guru, and also from Krishna, that there is no happiness in this material world. That's a very, how we say, powerful statement, because everybody is living in order to enjoy the happiness of Maya, right? There's no happiness in this world. Until we're convinced about that. Like one time Srila Prabhupada was discussing this point, and he was with his devotees, and they were talking about happiness in the material world. So one devotee said, well, Prabhupada, what about the mode of goodness? We understand that the mode of goodness is characterized by happiness. And Prabhupada said, yes, but the mode of goodness is mostly characterized by knowledge. And that knowledge tells you there's no happiness. So therefore, we understand that unless you hear from Guru, you can't understand Shastra. Because Guru is the, there is what is called Person Bhagavat and Shastra Bhagavat or Scripture Bhagavat. Both are competent to give transcendental knowledge, but Person Bhagavat is the living example of Scripture Bhagavat, and therefore can teach how to apply that knowledge in the Scripture in a very practical and philosophical way. So therefore one must seriously take shelter of someone who can give transcendental knowledge, transcendental direction like that. In every aspect of life, one needs a teacher. Right? We grow up by having a teacher. Who's our first teacher? Our mother, right? The second one is the father. And both teach us until they send us to some other teacher that's called school. And you learn there, or you're supposed to learn anyway. I learned two things in school. I learned how many feet are in a mile, and what is the speed of light. That's the only two things I learned in school. That's it. Sorry, I didn't do too good in class. I failed. And that's good, because too much material success makes one, what we say, oblivious or insensitive to the goal of life. So it's good to fail materially. It's actually a good asset. But if you're somehow ready to succeed, stop trying to succeed anymore. Turn the success in another direction. Whatever qualities you had to make you successful, that's very wonderful and laudable, but now change the direction. And use your success to as a foundation for the greater success, the success of Taktva Deham Purna Janmani Naiti Mamiti Sarjuna. A living entity doesn't belong in this material world. You think, well, I'm okay, you know, I got a nice wife, I got kids, I got money, I got position, I got so many things. But you're going to die. And then you got to come back again, and then somebody's going to change your diapers again. Haribo. You don't think of that. Material. That's just a fact. You come back and you don't know who's going to change your diapers. You may not even have diapers to change. You might be you might have four legs. And so there's no diapers. So in Prabhupada says, when you die, you can't choose who your next body. No more choosing at that point, you're under the influence of the material energy. Of course, the one who engages in devotional service will at least achieve a human body in the next life. So that's somewhat guaranteed. But, you know, if you get too sure of yourself, be careful, because Krishna says, oh, yeah, you think you know the Shastras, huh? Well, I'm the author of the Shastras. So things can change if we get become too self-assured in our spiritual practice. We should always be very, very sensitive to the fact that material energy is very, very, what's the word? Uncertain. Material energy is, uncertainty is the only certain thing about material life. Write that down, who's writing? Uncertainty is the only certain thing about material life. Your pen ran out of ink? Put it in bold letters, underline it. If you got red pen, you can use that. That's even better. So this is true. What is that? Prabhupada was talking. He was walking with a group of devotees in Denver. He says, here we are in this beautiful forest, a beautiful park, and it's very nice, but anytime, the whole thing can change in a second. Anytime. That's the material energy. It's very uncertain. Some person can decide to start a war, and everything changes all over. So this is the nature of material life. One can never be certain of anything in this world. So therefore, one has to take shelter of Krishna in devotional service. And that's the only success in life. That's the only success. So that's what Narada Muni is actually telling us here. That, and Prabhupada's actually expanding on it, that this whole Western society, they have so many material things, but they're lost. They're lost. And therefore, this Shastra, as Prabhupada said, we're introducing this knowledge. And therefore, one should discuss this knowledge. Bodhyantas parasparam kantiyatas chimam nityan tusyanti cha ramanti cha. That one derives great happiness, but not only happiness, but great benefit from discussing philosophical knowledge based on Shastra. We can go deeper and understand the finer aspects of the material energy in relationship to our practice of the spiritual life, and also get a clarification of our direction in spiritual life. Material energy is very powerful, but knowledge is the difference between success and failure. Prabhupada tells the story of the rabbit and the lion. You heard that story? The rabbit and the lion? How many have heard it? One, two, three, four. Okay. I'll tell it. There was a lion. And he was breaking all the codes of a proper lion. He wasn't following lion dharma. He was a lying lion. So he... I'm sorry. It's just my nature. I'm sorry. I have to follow my nature. He was harassing all the animals outside of the normal tendency for prasad. Because the lion usually gets one animal every 2 weeks, and that's how they live. But this lion was indiscriminately killing animals. So the animals got together and had a big meeting and said, well, we got to do something about this lion. He's harassing us. So they made a proposal. We'll have to make some sacrifice in order to live peacefully. We're going to have to sacrifice one of us every 2 weeks for the lion's lunch. And that way he won't harass us every day. So let's make the proposal. They called Mr. Lion. They had a GBC meeting, and the lion came. And they sat down, and he, you know, he agreed. He thought it was a very fair proposal. It's less work for him to eat, too. And the food would automatically come. Okay, so one day, it was the turn of this one rabbit. So the rabbit decided to come late, purposely. So he became really late to go to the lion. And the lion was really angry. Why are you late? And he said, whew. Wow, I'm lucky I'm even here. I was coming to you on time. And then there was this other lion. He wanted to eat me. And I told him, you can't do that. I'm meant to eat this about this other lion. So, you know, I had to really run away from this other lion. It was really hard for me to get away because I wanted to be eaten by you. And that was the deal. Something like that, anyway. So the lion said, where is this other lion? Who is he? I think I'm the only lion around this part of the forest. He said, no, he's another one. Really? He's cutting into my territory. This is zonal acharya. So, so he goes, the rabbi says, come on with me. I'll show you him. So he takes him to a well. He says, look in that well. There he is. So he looks in the well, and he sees a reflection. Oh, he says, yeah, he's down there. So the lion roars, and the roar comes back as an echo. He says, yeah, he's in there. So the lion jumps into the well to get this other lion, and he falls into the well. The rabbit gets away. Haribo. All glories to the rabbit. So the point was that, you know, knowledge, and Prabhupada uses this story, knowledge is greater than power. If you're a fool, you're a fool. But if you have knowledge, you can save yourself. So therefore, transcendental knowledge is the pathway to freedom. And therefore, one has to hear regularly from Shastra and Guru. And then I say regularly. That's just as more important. That's just as important as hearing. When we say hearing, we have to say regularly. Because we're getting the sounds of the material energy regularly. Therefore, in order to counteract that, and to keep our consciousness connected, one has to hear regularly from the acharyas and from the spiritual teachers like that, and from the shastras. So Narada Muni, he's merciful. He just jumps into the life of the Hariyashras, changes their direction. They like what he says, and you'll find out eventually they accept it, and then they don't even return home anymore. And Daksha's ride. That's the, you'll get to that. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes, Nityananda Pran.
Maharaj, in the class you were expressing that the need for someone to enter Grihastha Ashram is because they may have
some
emotional needs.
Yeah.
But as human beings, everyone has emotional needs.
Yeah.
So how does someone in the brahmachari stage, how do they satisfy or address their emotional needs?
Well, we might say emotional needs may branch out into different expressions. Ultimately, life is a relationship. The ultimate relationship is with Krishna. And that's the foundation to all relationships. When you have a relationship with Krishna, as the quality of that relationship branches out to your relationship with other living entities in various ways. Either through service, through compassion, through friendship, many ways. So for a brahmachari, we need to also find relationships within the ashram. So therefore, friendship is very important within brahmachari life, to develop real, solid friendship amongst brahmacharis, or at least amongst a few brahmacharis where you can find the need to exchange with others. I mean, you only get married to produce children, that's all. You can find that same friendship in your practice of spiritual life with other living entities as long as Krishna is the center, like that. Sex life is not the platform of happiness. In fact, it's the platform of suffering. The more you engage in sex, the more you suffer. The more you become ignorant. So grihastha life regulates sex life in only to produce children. That's all. And then therefore, that is the purpose of grihastha life, to produce Krishna conscious children, and then those children, they can also grow up and become Krishna conscious and save their parents also, and also do wonderful service for the society and for themselves. That's the only purpose of Grihastha life. And it's not about enjoying sense gratification, because sense gratification is not enjoyable. So there is regulation within Grihastha life. So if we can avoid that type of... But the thing is that what is the most need is everyone needs a relationship with another person. So you need to have exchange. A lot of times brahmacharis who are struggling to remain brahmacharis switch to household life because they're lonely. They're not able to open their heart to others, and therefore, because of that, they look for it in the relationship with the opposite sex, like that. So we have to find that. If you're seriously practicing brahmachari life, unless you develop what we say friendship, meaningful friendship with other brahmacharis and share Krishna consciousness together, you'll find that you're as a living being, you're feeling unfulfilled, even though you're engaged in devotional service. We need friendship. Yes, Mataji. You want to add to that? I always like the Grihasthas to add to the brahmachari philosophy. Could you pass her the microphone? Yes. Yeah, pass her the microphone.
If you've not completed, but I'm finding what you're expressing to be extremely confusing. So that's why my interjection.
What is confusing?
I'm expressing myself. So my purpose for entering Grihastha Ashram or my training is very different from what I'm hearing. One is we go through a process where we are trying to identify what needs may be and purposes of spiritual life well before we enter into the Grihastha Ashram.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not going into that to fulfill those needs.
We're not going to fulfill those needs?
Yeah. So I don't know that one. That's one point I need clarification on.
And you're going
you
there?
Know, I think Nityananda Pran Prabhu, he probably will know exactly what I'm trying to say. So that's one. Second is that Grihastha Ashram is meant to have children only. Is something also that I have... that I'm not able to relate to.
That's one of the main purposes.
Yeah, one of the purposes, but I believe there are three. And that's one of the three, but not the only.
Yeah.
That's the second point. And third point being that if men are supposed to be well-trained before entering into the Grihastha Ashram,
right.
They better know what those reasons are, and they certainly can be emotional.
Yeah.
And the only way to satisfy an emotion, if it's in the expression of sex life, that's just wrong. And as devotees, that's what we are doing, is just wrong. So these are the three things that I'm just not connecting with. And I think, Prabhu, you can take it from here. Thank you.
Thank you.
If a man can develop friendships, then that seems to connotate that the only reason that he would find a wife.
No.
Okay. I'm sure you didn't say it that, but that's how I heard it, and that's why I'm a little confused. Or the statement that one enters the Grihastha life, or he finds attraction to the opposite sex because he was lonely in the brahmachari ashram.
That's one reason.
There is something about being with a woman that the loneliness goes away, and that would mean physical contact, or something about women that they can...
No, it's an emotional outlet, some exchange, someone to understand you, to go deeper into your life, to have a dialogue.
There are many women who don't understand their husbands.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, they don't.
So it's not, so where I'm sitting in the gray area for me is one of those that one enters the grihastha ashram simply to have it or just to have children. I can see many examples of grihasthas who don't have children.
Right.
And they're very happily situated. So my question still remains. It's not that the brahmachari ashram or those who are in the brahmachari ashram have no emotional needs. They do. It's just that how are they addressed?
Right.
Because we have young men here, and somehow if they look at each other saying, oh, you have emotional needs and therefore you're getting married, they tend to develop a sort of
condescending
or a wrong perception. It may not be condescending, it's a wrong perception. Tomorrow they become preachers and then they go about spreading that wrong conception. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to ask.
Well, this is a broad subject. It's not so easy answered in one question. There are some persons who are not suited for brahmachari life. And they'll only do good in grihastha life in terms of their practice of Krishna consciousness. But the training is there for everyone. Everyone should have some training. So when one is trained sufficiently as a brahmachari, I think Mataji mentioned, then they're more sufficiently equipped to deal with the challenges of household life. But without that training, then they're not. Why do brahmacharis enter household life? That was your original question. For different reasons.
The question was,
for different reasons.
How are emotions in the brahmachari stage of life addressed?
You dovetail or you direct those emotions towards Krishna in devotional service.
You do that in the grihastha ashram too.
Yeah. But one is not sufficiently able to do that, or one is not feeling complete satisfaction in that, or one's tendency is towards grihastha ashram. I mean, there are certain persons that would never make it in grihastha. It's the reason why, I mean, in brahmacharya, the reason why is previous training in the society. People are grown up and somewhat conditioned to sense gratification from the time they're born. And then to come into brahmacharya life, I mean, it's a real rigorous switch in the way they think and the way they do things. So unless they're really determined to really stay fixed on the process and accept the austerity that comes with that, and generally the tendency is that they fall out of brahmacharya and fall into grihastha, or they can understand simply by the training they receive they're more suited for grihastha life like that. We have a comment by. Does that help to answer your question a little?
I mean, it helps generate conversation. I don't think I'm feeling like.
But how do brahmacharis dovetail their emotions? That's the basic question.
Yes.
Well, chant and dance. Chant and dance, right? Emotion is connected with the heart, and so if we can lovingly give our heart in devotion to Krishna, and we purify ourselves through the process of devotional service, then we can direct those emotions to Krishna, not away in another, engage it in devotional service. It really depends a lot on how much previous training you had. As a child, you see people who don't have. I'll give you an example. I think we know this. Need a break? We see people who who come to Krishna conscious, who don't have much exposure to the material energy growing up. They never had a girlfriend, or they never really engaged in anything illicit or drunks. They take fast to Krishna consciousness. It's easier for them. Those who had a somewhat of a wild life before and they come to Krishna consciousness, they're going to have to work with that. It takes a little bit more energy and effort to get over that. But if they're determined, they can do it. If they're determined. Like that. So our previous conditioning and our previous karma is going to influence how we practice our ashram a lot. Jai Jagannath, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I had a comment. I had another question also.
Yeah, go ahead.
As far as brahmacharis, how do they dovetail their emotions, or how do brahmacharis, we have emotions, and how do we deal with that? My general understanding, what I've heard on this topic, is has to do with the point of satisfaction. In all the ashrams, there will be some level of satisfaction, dissatisfaction, because it's the material world.
Right.
But generally, it's the idea that a brahmachari will be content with the lifestyle of study, service to guru, etc. And he's content with that. So there are some areas of dissatisfaction, but overall he's content. And I think Srila Prabhupada expressed it as, you work hard all day, you don't get paid, and at the end of the day you get like a 6-inch space to sleep on, and you lay down and you say, this is the life. You know, Prabhupada's simple way of kind of expressing that. So there's like a general satisfaction. Although within that there will always be some dissatisfaction in all the ashrams because it's the material world. But it's a general contentment with that lifestyle. And then when the contentment
is... But when you say lifestyle, natural, you're saying simplicity.
Yeah, simple, just...
Whereas, and one is not accustomed to adopt to such simple lifestyle, then their minds will get restless.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. There's some level of discontentment with that form of lifestyle in service to Krishna. Mm-hmm. So then they take on another form of lifestyle for service to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I learned the subject matter in this regard. It's just a, kind of a matter of satisfaction. And so his emotions are satisfied just by his study of Shastra, by his interaction in the ashram and his services to Guru and to the deity. And he's satisfied, overall satisfied.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, within all the ashrams, there'd be some level of dissatisfaction.
But I think friendship amongst devotees is fundamental to making that everything else you do, what we say, nice. Because if you, depending on the quality you have, quality of your relationship with others, because you're working together, you're serving together, you're studying together, you're living together in many cases. So as that relationship increases in the mood of friendship and service, so does the activities you perform also develop better and better quality. I think it's important. If you don't like the people you're with, that's really bad. And how do we don't like? Well, sometimes because we have different personalities. And personalities, characters sometimes clash. But we have to develop a service mentality in relationship to everything we do. So that's the fundamental key to the to everything, developing a mood of service. We see people stay in the ashrams for a long time. They study, they learn the scriptures, they do something else. But they don't develop that deep mood of service, or they don't develop the humility that is necessary to practice devotional service. And therefore they look outside of that for satisfaction. The idea is to find whatever you need within the ashram. But you might think, as a brahmachari, it doesn't fulfill all my needs. Therefore, grihastha ashram looks more suitable or more able to fulfill the needs that I'm looking for. So... There's where the spiritual master comes in, to help evaluate when we're in these types of questions, to help to get consultation, to get direction, to question, to discuss it. I saw two hands.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
My question is in regards to the swan mentality you were mentioning in the class about swan-like men.
Mm-hmm.
So that was reminding me of a section from one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books where he talks about two types of mentalities, an ass-like mentality and a swan-like mentality.
Right.
And he says of the two, the ass-like mentality is in the majority and the swan-like mentality is less. And then he describes the different types of adhikars. And then he says amongst...
Within the ass mentality or within the swan?
Well, he describes three, you know, the Kanishtha, Madhyam, Adhikar. He says within the Kanishtha and Madhyam, Adhikar stage, there are both ass-like and swan-like personalities. And he says in the Kanishtha stage, the ass-like persons, they quarrel over standards and very sort of external things.
Mm-hmm.
They'll quarrel amongst that. But the swan-like Kanishtha Adhikaris, they will put aside such quarrels and try to attain a higher standard of Krishna consciousness, leaving aside the quarrels. Amongst the Madhyam Adhikaris, he mentions that they don't really quarrel over standards. That's really kind of insignificant for them. But they tend to get caught up in philosophical disagreements.
Right.
And in that way, they go on and on. He says, so these are amongst the ass-like Madhyam Adhikaris. But amongst the swan-like Madhyam Adhikaris, they will respect different sorts of understandings and standards of the neophytes and others. And they will also inquire about higher topics so they can also attain a higher standard.
Mm.
So he's mentioning that there are both ass-like and swan-like personalities within both those stages. So my question came is that in our society, we probably, you know, generally neophyte or Madhyam Adhikaris. So then we'll find such mentalities there
in both
the two
yeah.
stages. And my question is simple. How do we develop a swan-like mentality? Because
by following the characteristics of the swan-like. You mentioned those characteristics yourself. They don't quarrel over philosophical, you know, points. They can see, they can discriminate between different levels of philosophical understanding. It's not about quarreling, it's about understanding. The word quarrel comes in as the feature of ass. Whereas those who don't quarrel... You pretty much answered your own question, I think.
Well, I mentioned the standards, of course, but in terms of experience, personal experience and vicariously, we see that it's very hard to adopt a swan-like mentality. Even after hearing such things, the tendency is to quarrel, the tendency is to judge and find fault with other people's standards of practices, their ways of understanding various topics. That is the tendency experience.
That's neophyte, right? That's neophyte. Madhyam also discriminates, but he discriminates between those who are, you know, devotees and those who are non-devotees. And he discriminates between, he makes friendship. He makes a discrimination based on the principles of the execution of devotional service. But finding fault is one of the anarthas. One has to see what is actually a fault and what is a different way of doing things. Now, Krishna consciousness is not just like one way of doing things. The principle is bhakti, and the way to do it is to follow the principles as given by the spiritual master. But then the adaptation of intelligence to apply the principles makes one move in one direction or another according to one's proclivities. You know, one may have a conservative outlook on how to preach, one may have a more of a liberal outlook how to preach. But what is the foundation is that it's determined by what kind of success one is getting in each. So to accommodate various types of mentality without finding fault is a pretty, it takes a little bit of advancement and discrimination like that, because we see that in our society also. We're seeing that people find fault with other ways of doing things like that. Therefore, using Prabhupada's instructions is the foundation for everything we do, and therefore, that's the difference between dogma and, well, what does it say? Understanding, what is it? Okay, here it is, I got it, finally. Took me a little while to get it. So, Sruti Kirti Prabhu said, to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, you allowed women to come into our movement where it wasn't done before, to actually practice on the same level as the men. And therefore you're also, and Prabhupada said, yes, I have actually become famous for that. But I've also been criticized for that both. So then Shrutikirti said, well, how does one understand how to make a change? How do you know? And then Prabhupada said, well, one has to know the difference between a fundamental principle and a detail. You can't change fundamental principles, but you can change details. So then Shrutikirti said, well, how do you understand the difference between a fundamental principle and a detail? And Prabhupada's answer was, that takes intelligence. That takes intelligence. No one's going to tell you this is the difference. You have to have that adhikari, as you mentioned, to be able to make that discrimination. And therefore, if you do it and don't have the adhikari, you know, then you might say that then that's a point of criticism. Prabhupada had the, and Prabhupada showed by making that adjustment, he spread Krishna consciousness around the world. He made many other adjustments too. So we see even preachers in our movement are making certain adjustments, but you can't change the fundamental principle. Like, for example, what's a fundamental principle? One must accept a living spiritual master. One cannot say, well, my spiritual master is Rupa Goswami. Therefore, I follow him because he is the acharya of the, he is the Abhideya acharya for our movement, and therefore he, whatever he teaches is the fundamental principle for all other gurus to teach. Therefore, my guru is Rupa Goswami. No. You can get Rupa Goswami through the present acharya, who is a representative of the previous acharya, like that. So now we're getting into details and fundamentals. So what is another detail? What's a detail? We have to eat only Indian food because we're an Indian movement. Don't only give me, you know, like sabjis and pakoras and chapatis and dal, and don't give me any pizza or pasta or whatever. That's Maya. Right? What Prabhupada said, that's a detail. That's a detail. He said, keep the cuisine within the category of the principles, but one can eat various types of cuisine. So that's changing the... And Prabhupada was criticized at the beginning. He said, one person said to Prabhupada, you know, the Americans, they're not going to like all this Indian food. Prabhupada said, that's okay. Make something American. Something Western. Cook it. Offer it to Krishna. Make sure it's, you know, it's free from, you know, the meat and like that. So there's the conservatives, that's the pakoras, and then there's the liberals, the pizzas, right? So, you know, you see our movement is an international movement. So we adopt some of the details according because of culture and nationality to accommodate the practice of devotional service. And people may perform the details in a different way, but the fundamentals are never adjustable. Therefore, how do you know that? As Prabhupada said, it takes intelligence. That's all he said. And that's all, he left it at that. One has to have that intelligence. Does that help? Thank you. Thank you. That was a really good point on the different adhikaris, the ass and the swan within the different three. Yeah, let's see. There was a question there. Okay. Your question is no longer?
Well, I was just curious to hear your perspective or appreciations of...
I'm getting a little background here. If you, let me say one thing. If you have some service to do or you have to go, please don't feel restricted. But those who want to stay can stay.
I've been hearing the discussion and also previous discussions on the topic of ashram in the Bhagavatam and in different classes. And in some cases, it seems that persons who are eligible to remain in the Brahmacharya ashram have a spiritual advantage or a greater spiritual qualification.
And a spiritual advantage?
Yeah. Where this is just an impression I've gotten in different discussions within the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
And persons who transition to the Grihastha ashram, there is some spiritual disadvantage.
The main disadvantage and advantage is one word, time.
Well, so my question is, in other words, like, persons having a greater degree of Krishna consciousness may be able to stay in the Brahmacharya ashram, but persons who are having a lesser degree of Krishna consciousness may have to transition to the Grihastha ashram.
No. Scratch that off the recording. No, you don't want to say that. Because if you look at the history of our movement, you'll see some of the greatest services were done by the persons in Grihastha ashram, even within ISKCON and in the history of our movement. So you can't say that. Prabhupada actually sent three Grihastha couples to start to open up to London. Prabhupada said, my godbrothers failed in London, but my Grihastha disciples were successful. My sannyas godbrothers failed in London. So you can't really say advancement. The advantage of the celibate or the ashram outside of Grihastha is that you have more time for Krishna. When you're in Grihastha life, you have to do other things that seem to take away your attention away from devotional service. That's all. It's a time element. Yeah. It's time. Advancement, you know, advancement is not limited to ashram. Mataji in the back, yeah. And then you're next. I forgot your name. I'll almost remember it. Yes, Mataji, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Thank you so much, Guru. Please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Guru, and Gauranga. I really appreciate your lecture, and I totally understand your explanation of the different ashrams, and I respect what you're saying. I have great respect for the Grihastha ashram. That's something that I can't necessarily practice, and I think what I heard from you is that whatever ashram encourages or perpetuates advancement in Krishna consciousness, you should take that ashram because that's the goal.
Yeah, it's a personal thing.
Yes, yes. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. People may be suited differently. Prabhu. Please tell me your name again. I forgot.
My name is Jagadananda.
Huh?
Jagadananda Das.
Jagadananda.
Yeah.
How could I forget? I'm sorry. I didn't sleep last night, so that's why I can't remember little things when I'm tired.
That's okay, Maharaj. It's okay.
Okay.
So, firstly, I want to thank you. It's wonderful to hear you again here in Chicago. And I also felt the presentation was wonderful. And as you were sharing, I mean, this whole topic of Grihastha and Brahmacharya, there was a context to it where Prajapati Daksha, he has given a service to his sons.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, Narada Muni, he comes and he sees that they are performing this, they're performing austerities, they are purified.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that context, as you said, so it was contextual. So you mentioned that he didn't feel that they would require the grihastha ashram as a service for their purification. Yeah, they are better suited. So I think in all these discussions, as you said, the most important point is to have a guru who will understand one's nature.
So Narada Muni saw that the boys known as the Haryasu were already purified because of living in that holy place and were practically ready for liberation. Why then should they be encouraged to become entangled in family life, which is so dark that once entering it, one cannot leave it? Narada Muni asked them to consider why they should follow their father's order to be entangled in family life. Indirectly, he asked them to find within the cores of their heart the situation of the Supersoul. For then they would be truly experienced. So, this is what Prabhupada says in the purport. He could see. A little confusing, huh?
Yeah.
We need new batteries.
I have to be comfortable with my ashram, and as you said, know for sure that I can get to the lotus feet of Krishna if I follow the principles of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, but Grihastha ashram is not to the end of life. Yeah. Grihastha ashram is a stage within life.
Right, exactly.
Then one has to move into a more renounced position in later in life when one fulfills all the duties of the Grihastha ashram. Because at the time of death, one should be free from any kind of material entanglement or any material responsibilities, and so we can focus completely on Krishna. That's the goal. So it's a stage. But if you can avoid that stage and go direct, that's what Narada Muni is telling here. Them. If it's for those who can avoid it, good. Those who can't, then let them practice, you know, the Grihastha ashram properly, you know, become Krishna conscious, and then detach themselves from that activity later in life. So it's a stage, that's all. Mataji, you okay with that? With this discussion? Yeah, it's not like one reason for getting married. But the ultimate reason is to become Krishna conscious. Yeah, that's the whole thing. So. If you read the scriptures, you'll find that both condemnation of the Grihastha ashram and support of the Grihastha ashram is built there in the Shastras. Both. It's condemned in certain places, as Prabhupada said, licit or illicit, it's all illicit. Now, brahmacharis like that. Because we're not this body. That's the whole thing. So any bodily pleasures are simply a deviation. But then again, one cannot jump up to the highest platform automatically. That would be foolish, or that would be not only foolish, that would be pretentious. So one has to follow the process and eventually become detached, like that. But you don't enter grihastha life to get more attached. That's not the process. Okay. Jagadananda Prabhu, was okay? Okay. Thank you.
And
it depends what you're looking for.
Exactly. But also, I think all of us are hearing with our own filters and conceptions. So we should be careful to not, twist it around.
Yeah.
I think all of us.
And the brahmachari
should. The grihasthas, everyone.
The brahmachari should see the grihasthas as people who are more responsible than them, and the grihasthas should see the brahmachari as being them more renounced than them, that's all. And they should appreciate each other, not like, well, I'm a brahmachari and you're a grihastha. Bleh. No. That's childish, and it's silly, it's also offensive. Or the grihasthas used to say, well, because they can't do anything else, they're brahmacharis, right? They can't take on any responsibility, therefore just let them chant Hare Krishna and lay on the floor and eat some khichdi. So, you get that back and forth, right? So one is trying to push his own particular point and saying that, it's everyone has their suitable place for spiritual development. You have to find that. You have to find that. Yes, question.
One point that you told, that how it is important to express your feeling and emotion with other devotees. Because it happens that even if the person is not going to grihastha life or not doing something else, he might go out of the temple if he's not expressing his feeling or emotion.
He might go where?
He might go away from the temple life. He might go away somewhere else and have different activities. So it's better to express the feeling. That's very important.
It's to go see. Yeah. You have to use your body, your mind, your words, and your intelligence in Krishna consciousness. If you're shutting down one part of your existence, you're not going to grow properly. You have to learn to use all of those in Krishna consciousness. And sometimes in brahmachari life, we just talk about restrictions, what we shouldn't do. But we have to teach how to dovetail our desires, emotions, qualities, intelligence in the service of the Lord, in relationship with others who are doing the same thing. It's complete. It's not just limited like that. If you don't use your intelligence in Krishna consciousness, after a while you'll feel you're not making an advancement. It's true, you won't be. I'll give you an example. I had a devotee who was in the brahmachari ashram in London for many years. He was there 7 years. And then I could see he's got to get out of the ashram in order to make advancement. He's outgrown the ashram. He needs to preach. He's a preacher. And he wasn't able to find that preaching outlet in the ashram. So I sent him to another temple, let him train everything. Then we sent him to Vrindavan. So now, it appears that he's making advancement. So it's up to the spiritual master to evaluate, along with the authorities within the ashram, how a person is making advancement or how he's not making advancement, and give them the opportunity to progress like that. We can't just put a person in the ashram and let them follow the rules of the ashram. There should be regular evaluation. How are that person progressing? What does they need to progress? Like that. It's not just, you just give them some service, you give them a place to stay, and then that's it. No. Evaluation is part of it. Spiritual master, in conjunction with the temple authorities, evaluates the progress of a person. And they have to be competent enough to be able to do that evaluation and see. And sometimes, oh, this person will make more advancement if they do this or accept this service like that. Because not everyone's the same. Not everybody's the same. To amalgamate everybody and think everybody can do the same and act the same is foolish. It's not like that. We have to become, you have to be yourself and be Krishna conscious. People think, I can't stay in the ashram because I can't be myself. Well, maybe the ashram is not allowing you to be yourself because it's not providing the needs for you to grow. So that's up to the ashram to do that. But ultimately, you have to be yourself and be Krishna conscious. Both. You can't be somebody else. Try to be someone else. Your spiritual qualities will grow as you express them through your tendencies or your needs or your intelligence, your abilities, like that. That's why this is where Varnashram comes in. This is the whole thing, Varnashram. Okay, this person has Brahminical tendencies, this person has Kshatriya tendencies, this person has Vaishya tendencies. To cultivate, to educate that, to bring that out. That person's a leader, he's a good manager. That person's a preacher, this person can do this kind of service. To evaluate and to educate, to evaluate, to educate, and to engage people according to their needs. We haven't got there completely as a society yet, but we're working towards that. Okay? Yes, Mother Maria. I think this is the last question because we all have to, you can't live on philosophy alone, you have to have prasad also. It's good philosophy.
Thank you, Maharaj, for your nice class. You touched upon detachment, and so my question is, what does that process look like? What hastens detachment? What stalls that process?
Well, we say attachment, detachment, attachment. The more you get attached to Krishna, the more you get it detached from Maya. You develop a higher taste. You can't give up, you can't detach yourself from something just by wanting to detach yourself. There has to be something better you attach yourself onto. So you can theoretically and philosophically attach yourself on to devotional service. But unless you get that higher taste, you'll go back to the lower detachment, a lower attachment after a while. So therefore, we follow rules and regulations to get us detached. That's what the rules and regulations are, is to attach us to Krishna and detach us from Maya, like that. But we have to develop that higher taste, or else detachment is only theoretical. It becomes complete when we're the more and more we're attached to Krishna. Then we look at the things we used to be attached for and we say, oh man, how did I ever do that? Ooh. Right? We look back on it. Because you got a higher taste. Okay? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Krishna.